Not my idea, man. I just, you know, just rolled in here myself. But thanks for waking up for me today. And hope it's a fun-filled morning for you. This morning, we're going to spare no expense to bring you the dynamic duo here. Old friend of mine, Elias Levy, and Oliver Fredericks. We're going to talk about global early warning systems. So no further ado, take it away, guys.
Details and the requirements of building a system to detect attacks that are breaking out, including worm activity, widespread hacker attacks, and other malicious activity that may be happening on the internet, causing disruption, DDoS activity, and pretty much anything that can affect network infrastructure. So the first quote that you see here was made in 1998 by former director of the NSA, Kenneth Minahan, and it says that the United States really has little ability to detect or recognize a cyber attack against government or private sector infrastructures. That was 4 years ago, and today things have gotten a lot better. We have a lot more eyes and ears out on the internet, on networks. IDS systems have advanced quite a bit in the last few years, so we really do have a lot more visibility. But that being said, all of the systems that are out there right now are widely dispersed. There's no central system that ties all of that information together on a global scale, protecting North America and protecting the rest of the internet itself. So really what we're talking about is building a system that ties all of this information together from a multitude of different security devices, analyzes it, and produces reliable threat data on impending attacks and attacks that are on the rise. So that being said, there have been moves to enhance visibility into different market segments and different infrastructures. The creation of ISACs was fairly significant. Unfortunately, they don't tie together real-time event data. So currently, ISACs are more based around contributions made by members. So they don't have the eyes and ears of up-to-date real-time event information from security devices on the internet. Global early warning system is really intended to provide early warning of wide-scale attacks on the internet. So I'm going to talk about the requirements of a system like this. There's three main requirements. One is to provide real-time global event intelligence. That is collecting event information from different security devices on the internet and on corporate networks. We're talking firewalls, IDSs, routers, antivirus products. Really, any type of security device that produces event information is useful to a system like this. The next key point is human intelligence. Having eyes and ears to the ground to keep track of what are the latest exploits, what are the latest vulnerabilities, what do we really need to look out for? That's really, really significant because the event information alone sometimes does not allow you to see what's actually happening without also knowing what the latest vulnerabilities are and what the event information may mean. And then finally, there needs to be analysis, distillation, and response of all of that event information. Gathering it all is one thing, but you have to have a team of people or an automated system that notifies someone that something is happening. And that's really the intelligence that goes into analyzing all of that data, correlating it, and then responding to whatever incident may be happening. So some high-level requirements for a system like this. It really needs to be vendor-neutral, preferably, but in a perfect world, actually, in today's world, that's probably not going to happen. It needs to be a public system, preferably, but again, that's really difficult to do. So currently, the only way that this system can exist is in a private, customer-funded system. It needs to be standards-based, and it needs to be supported by different vendors. Fortunately, it's easy to integrate vendors simply because most security devices produce some type of event data that can be correlated and aggregated and incorporated into a system like this. And the reason that currently a system like this can only exist in the private sector is that it really takes a lot of infrastructure and a lot of money to run a system like this. The hardware to aggregate all of this data, to pull it all in, to do all the correlation, to engineer a system like this is pretty significant. So, you know, it really does require a significant investment to build something like that. What type of data do we want to analyze? And I'm going to go through this on a high level first and then drill down into each of these specific items. We want to look at network-based intrusion detection systems. We want to look at firewall data. We want to look at antivirus data. We want to look at global BGP traffic. We want to look at denial of service statistics that we can gather on the internet. And we want to look at host-based intrusion detection systems, honeypots, and other key internet infrastructure items that we want to monitor on a continual basis to ensure that they're up and running and that they haven't been under attack. So the first item that I'm going to go into detail about is network-based intrusion detection systems. Gathering data from IDS systems is valuable in the sense that it gives you real empirical data on attacks that are currently happening. Due to the availability of known signatures for known attacks, there's a fairly good chance that the attack that's being recognized by the IDS is in fact happening, at least more so than any other type of security device besides antivirus products. That being said, they're obviously still prone to false positives, and that'll likely always be an issue, but through statistical analysis and modeling of event data as it comes in, the false positives can really be ruled out in the system, and we can really detect real attacks as they're happening. The second thing is it's easy to map between different vendors. For example, ISS, RealSecure, Symantec NetProwler, all the different vendors have different IDS signature sets. It's really easy to map between them so that we have a common signature and we can correlate between all the different vendors and look at it as a whole, as one system. And again, it's effective for known attacks, and there's enough generic signatures for good general coverage. For example, there's a lot of signatures like the x86 shellcode signature that allows us to see general x86 buffer overflow exploits and other exploits like that may be happening that don't have a specific signature. Most IDSs also report on port activity, so we can see events rising against specific ports, like for example port 80, and we can do analysis on that to see whether there's a trend or there's increasing attack activity on those ports. So we don't necessarily need a signature, but the signature does give us more insight into what's happening. Drawbacks is that it does require a known signature for most items, and it may not be as effective for unknown attacks, but the port activity does overrule that somewhat. The next system is firewall systems. And the benefit of firewall systems is that they don't actually require a specific signature so that we can see increases of activity against specific ports. We can also correlate that with IDS activity and see whether there's a match between what's happening globally on IDS systems and globally on firewall systems. And the benefit is they provide data on blocked port activity, and you can, again, infer what's happening based on recent vulnerabilities that may have been found or released. Drawbacks with firewall data is that you can't necessarily determine what attack you're seeing. So the difficulty is that you don't know what the attacker's using, but you can tell that there's a rise in certain port activity. And there's really a high volume of data that you're getting from firewall systems because a lot of firewalls will block innocent activity that a user may be trying to get at, use a service that's not allowed through the firewall. So really by correlating it globally, you want to do an analysis on that and you want to try to track down and eliminate any of that non-useful data. The next type of product that you want to integrate is antivirus products. The benefit with AV products is that it gives you insight after an event is already known or malicious code is already found. It can tell you what's the propagation rate of that malicious code. Is it spreading? Is it a dud? Did it pretty much just die off after the AV vendor released a definition? Or is it a real threat like Clez, NIMDA, CIRCAM, all of the serious viruses that we've seen in the last while? Again, you can correlate this with all of the other data that you're getting. And also by integrating heuristic activity, you can also see potentially new threats as they're emerging as well. So all this data together provides you with a good overview of what's happening. One item that you can also add to a system like this is global BGP traffic. During the NIMDA code red worm breakouts, we really saw a rise in the number of BGP updates that were seen on the internet. Because these worms were taking down routers and other network segments due to the amount of traffic they generated, routers on the internet backbones were continually updating their routes and causing an influx of BGP updates to be sent out. By pulling in this data, by either peering with backbone routers or obtaining this data through any of the public data sources, you can also do the same analysis on the number of BGP updates that are happening in a certain time frame. So you can see an increase in updates and, again, correlate that with the rest of the data that you're seeing to determine that a significant event may be happening. And there was an analysis or a document released by Renesas Corporation on this that discusses in detail and actually shows what was seen during those events as they were monitoring this activity. Now, one other item you can look at is DDoS statistics. Basically, they can be used as a metric to determine the level of DDoS activity that you're seeing on the internet. You can integrate either with DDoS appliances that are out there or do backscatter analysis. Backscatter analysis, for those of you who don't know, is really the capturing of packets that are coming back from the host that's being attacked. And if you can monitor a large enough address space on the internet, you can receive back packets that are coming back from that host since the source address is spoofed. And you can essentially infer who's being attacked and to what level they're being attacked. And there's a couple other ways that you can get this data through analyzing NetFlow data from Cisco routers and, like I said, integrating with DDoS appliances and other software solution vendors. The next type of system is host-based intrusion detection systems. They provide insight into what's happening on the host potentially after a successful compromise or during an attack. And you can correlate this again with network-based IDS and infer that global events may be happening on the internet. Now, a really valuable system to integrate is the honeypot. There's really a number of different types of honeypots. Some of them are individual systems that are deployed on the internet that provide essentially a bait box like a default Solaris install or a customized system like Mantrap to provide a system for someone to break into. The second type is something like HoneyD, written by Niels Provost, which is a publicly available open source tool that essentially sits on a network, swallows up all unused address space, and can simulate an entire network of systems providing right down to the stack level emulation of different operating systems. It can read an NMAP configuration file, so you can tell it which operating system you want to emulate on which address, and it'll basically just sit there accepting connections from anybody and providing services that you tell it to on which port you tell it to. So by gathering all of this data, you can really detect attacks that may be probing random address space on a wide scale or attacks that may be specifically targeting these hosts. Now, you can also gather backscatter data from this type of honeypot simply because it's sitting there listening on a huge address space and looking for responses that are coming to it that are really unsolicited because you've never sent out a packet from these fake hosts, but all of a sudden you get one coming into it. So by gathering all of that data, you can, again, provide more insight into global activity that you may be seeing. And again, there's some drawbacks, like a single bait system it's a little more difficult to integrate because it's just one system. So the preferable way is to provide a whole network, like a Class C or Class B network address space that you're emulating. You also want to monitor other key internet infrastructure, like DNS servers, root DNS servers, RIPE, ARIN, APNIC, registries, government systems, and potentially Fortune 500 sites. Really any piece of key internet infrastructure that you want to monitor to make sure that, it's available. So really what you can do is by monitoring all of these different types of, information, you can really have a good view of what's happening on the internet. And that was just an example of some of the vendors that you can potentially integrate with and what a system like this needs to integrate with to be successful. So one of the things a system like this needs is an IDS event correlation database to tie together signatures from different vendors into a common signature set. The same goes for firewall events, the same goes for virus events. Essentially any type of security device that you're integrating into a system like this needs to have some kind of mapping to allow you to normalize the data and have a single view of what's actually happening out there. In turn, linking those signatures and those events to a vulnerability database allows you to see which vulnerabilities are actually being exploited here. And in turn, that vulnerability database can be linked to a product database. So foreseeably, in a system like this, you can run queries on your data and you can actually tell which products are being attacked specifically. You can also choose to monitor certain products, looking for specific rises in attacks against like Microsoft IIS. I don't know of any effort that's been made that really addresses the industry.
All right. Vendors are balkanized to do anything of that nature. Each of them are going their separate ways. They have no incentive to generate a unique signature format, even at the high level, never mind at the low level. So that's unlikely to happen anytime soon unless their customers start really asking for it and they haven't. Correct, but the information sharing RFC has more to do with summary information of events as opposed to the actual signatures of them. Sure, the question was whether this any drive towards a common high-level signature format or even the output of the signature itself, and the answer to that question was no.
Okay, so by tying together all of these different types of events, you can detect, for example, a worm outbreak. I just want to give you an example of what a system like this looks like in this section. We've been gathering data now for over 1.5 years. We have over 1 billion events that we've gathered from systems around the world. In the DeepSight system. A system like this consists of an upload server that accepts the data from all of the sensors located around the world, a hunter server which does all the resolution of addresses as they come in to see where they're located geographically, and then you can also detect where attacks are happening and where they're coming from based on this data. Finally, a reporting server that allows you to run reports on this data that's coming in, data mining, looking for events that are rising, and really this is where your analysis is done to detect trends and to detect events as they're happening. A web server to provide a web interface to the user, and a console. The DeepSight Analyzer service is a free service that we provide for anyone who provides data to the DeepSight system. It's really a web-based incident management console. That in return for the data, you get access to manage your events from multiple IDSs. DeepSight Extractor is what actually sends the data to the DeepSight system. It reads event log information, transmits it to the DeepSight system over SSL. It also allows you to anonymize your data. If, for example, you don't want to disclose who you are, you can anonymize it, and the system doesn't know who you are if you have any privacy concerns. and I already sort of talked about the upload server. It receives XML event data from DeepSite Extractor, processes it. Hunter server does lookups when events come in. It determines where they are. It does a reverse DNS lookup, determines who owns the domain, where it's geographically located, determines who the NetBlock owner is, queries all of the major registries and who has servers, just to determine who the NetBlock owner is, who the upstream provider is, and provides contact information for those attackers, so that in the console itself, you can notify the attacker if your systems have been attacked.
I should also point out that you can add a lot of other information here that you can gather. For example, you may choose to utilize some service like Quoba that provides you fairly granular geographical information about the different host IP addresses, both attacker and destination, as well as you may decide that you may want to fingerprint some of the source attackers to determine what type of operating system they're using, maybe do a port scan to determine, have an idea of what they might be broken into, etc.
And then when you get that information, you store it all in a database so that you really only have to look it up once in a certain time frame. You obviously want to refresh it so that you're always up to date after a certain timeout. Report server, I already talked about it, runs reports on the data that's coming in, allows you to see what's happening on your networks. And that's just a screenshot of what the console looks like that you have access to if you provide data to the system. And at this point, Elias is going to take over, and he's going to talk about some of the data that we've seen in the system to date, and also some of the types of analysis that we do in the system as data comes in.
Thought we'd just go over again what really types of attacks are we trying to look for out there and provide some examples of things that we've actually seen in the wild, just to give an idea of how such a system like this might actually work. These are just some smallest examples and just part of what, you know, a system like this should be capable of doing. Like we talked, you can see this is a continuum of the different types of attacks we can have out there. You can have a small number of sources, small number of victims. That would be a really individual focused attack. The system doesn't work very well for detecting something like that. You really would have to have sensors at the destination of the attack to really get an idea that they're under attack. We're really looking for global threats to the infrastructure. So sometimes things that are a threat to a large number of people, not individual systems. Similarly, go up that chart, you would have a coordinated attack where you would have multiple sources attacking a small number of people, maybe just an individual system. Again, because you would need to have sensors and the network under attack, it would be really difficult for a system like this to really catch it. And on the other hand, it's not something that we're really all that interested in, because we're looking for threats to the global infrastructure. On the other extreme of that chart, you have broad attacks, could be an individual attacker or a small number of attackers launching attacks against a large portion or a large number of host systems. And that's something that we're interested in, because that the number of hosts that are under attack may increase substantially, and that's something we want to alert on. And similarly, we would have the top, something like a worm outbreak, where you have an increasing number of sources and attacking an increasing number of targets. And that is something that we're most definitely interested in, give you an early warning so you can prepare for the oncoming attack. Individual attacks, again, as I said, one system against one target, and that's something that we're looking for, and it would be something very difficult to detect, although you will catch it every once in a while just because your sensor is under attack. Coordinated attacks, you would have multiple sources attacking a single target. Again, that's something we're really looking for. You'll find every once in a while. but not with this type of system. Now, here's where it really starts getting interesting. You start seeing broad attacks, you know, small number of sources, ducking a large portion of the internet. So we'll go through one example of a system that was doing just this. So here we have a graph of some data that we obtained from our sensors. We're seeing an increasing number of FTP source attack, port attack. This is basically a signature that is telling you that someone is using the FTP port as a source port for whatever attack they're launching. You can see that on July the 19th, there was a substantial increase in this number of attacks. Our system is designed basically to continuously look for anomaly on the data that it's receiving, either increases in attacks, and increases of associated with certain port numbers or products or number of sources or any number of other factors and combinations of them. So this would be something that would certainly raise an alarm and would make us look a little bit further as to what might be causing this type of activity. So that was the number of sensors seeing that type of attack. Another way to look at this data is just by the volume of events that are being seen from that type of activity. And we can see that it's fairly substantial, definitely out of the ordinary. We actually see that there's been two peaks during the time period that we graphed here, one on the 29th, another one on the 19th. So definitely something we would look further into. Now, if we run a report trying to determine what IP addresses are actually launching these types of attacks, we noticed that most of the activity actually appears to be the source of one IP address. That would be that 202.30.44.6. We see that, you know, at least 38 of the sensors have seen some activity related to this attack from it, as well as the majority of events are coming from that particular IP address. If we graph the same data, but this time we do it on an IP address by IP address basis, and that would be the blue line here for that IP address that we saw earlier, we noticed that from the number of sensors, definitely matches what we saw before. We saw that on the 19, majority of sensors are seeing that attack, and in fact, that attack is being seen from that IP address by most sensors on both dates. The 19, which was the date that there was that major spike, and then on the 29th and a little bit on the 27th later on. Again, similar data, but this time we're looking at the events, the number of events that we're seeing from that IP address and other IP addresses. And again, the blue line is that IP address that we pointed out earlier. And we noticed that, in fact, it is responsible for the majority of events that we saw during those times. So it's a pretty strong correlation between what we're seeing and that particular IP addresses. So that gives a pretty good indication that this is, in fact, a broad attack where we have a single IP addresses scanning a large portion of the internet or attacking a large portion of the internet for some particular attack. The signature that we're looking at here is the FTP source port attack, which, again, all it really means is that whatever they're doing, they're using the FTP port as a source port, possibly to bypass whatever firewalls might be in the middle of the trick. So what we're really interested in finding out is, you know, okay, so they're using the FTP, you know, as a source port, but what are they really doing? You know, what attacks are they really launching? So we'll try to figure that out. So we can get a little more information about them. We actually noticed that the IP address is registered to a machine in Korea. This is something that is fairly common, especially Korean hosts that tend to be not all that well managed. They actually do account for a large portion of attacks across the internet. Whether, you know, what's the reason behind that, would be difficult to tell. But certainly the language barrier is one of the reasons that the systems are not fixed up for now. As Oliver mentioned earlier, one of the features of the ARIS analyzer system is it allows you to notify sources of attacks or whoever's responsible for that IP address range, let them know that, you know, this activity is going on, and, you know, would you mind looking into it? Your host may be broken into, you may want to look into it. I found out definitely that the whole language barrier is a major problem. When you have a Korean system administrator that might not speak very much English, and all of a sudden they get a lot of these notices. They have no idea what it's all about, and systems don't get fixed. So if we try to run a report of what attacks are being seen from that IP address during the time range, we find that, you know, most of the attacks that we catch are just that same FTP data source port attack. You know, I get a couple of TCP port scan probes, but that's not very much. And this is the reason that most IDSs simply stop processing data once they get a match. So instead of continuing to try to determine, you know, what other attack might be associated with that traffic, they simply stop. You know, this is an advantage and a disadvantage. You know, it's an advantage is that they lower their processing requirements as opposed to having to run through all of their signatures. On the other hand, you get things like this where you actually lose information. You have no idea, you know, what really happened. You get a little bit of piece of information, but it would be good if at least some signatures like this one, which are really just ancillary data and not the main reason that you want to find out what's going on, would be kept on processing. So we'd have to look for some other way to get that information on what's going on. Now, the fact that we see the scan probes there, you know, gives a good indication that that is probably what they're doing, but we probably want to find out a little better. So if we run a similar report, but this time we just try to run what the target ports are, we see that in fact they, you know, he targeted a TCP port on the 19. And as a matter of fact, what he was doing was just doing a broad scan looking for vulnerable OpenSSH hosts for one of the many recent vulnerabilities to break into those systems. And he was using the FTP source data port just to bypass whatever firewalls are maybe in the middle. Kind of strange, then the same host later on, the 29, started scanning for TCP SMMP. We're not sure what he was looking for there, what he was looking for in a relay. That is something that we definitely don't find very often for them just to switch, you know, from going from one vulnerability and then going for something like SMMP, but they did. Now we thought we'll show you a little example again of a worm outbreak. Again, a worm outbreak is when you have an increasing number of sources attacking an increasing number of targets, usually in the case of worm activity. So I thought for our example, we would show the recent SQL Speedo worm. This would be a worm that attacks Microsoft SQL servers. It scans the network looking for SQL servers with an ACE system administrator account with no password. And once it does that, it uses some of the extended procedures in SQL to execute some commands on the system, and that's where it actually propagates. And it was initially detected on May the 20th. So as I said, our system automatically is always looking for anomalies on the data. You know, once it finds its anomalies, it wants to bring it to the notice of the different analysts. So one of the methods it does this is it sends out an alert. So here you have an example of the first alert that we got regarding this particular worm. The system basically let us know that there's an increasing number of activity related to the SQL, you know, port, which is port 33. Therefore, the analyst may want to look into it. In fact, you know, throughout the day, the number of alerts that we received regarding this activity started increasing. You can see this is actually a small sample of it. There were about 20 more. So the system continues to find activity. It continues to notice that activity keeps rising until at the end, you know, it's fairly obvious that some major occurrence is going on, and you better take notice very quickly to determine what it is and alert your constituency that they might have you know, worm outbreak in their hands. They might want to take, you know, action to protect themselves. Yes. Rumor mill versus non-rumor mill type of alerts is basically the different models that we use for the data. Rumor mill alerts are more sensitive, but they accept more noise, so they're less reliable. The non-rumor mill alerts are more reliable. They have a different model that it's able to throw away some data to make, but has this, just more sure that the activity is actually happening. And the levels are just, without going into detail, it's just a level of how bad the activity is. So, a 1, 2, and a 3, it's interesting. You may want to get to it when you get a chance. 3, 4, and 5, there's something definitely interesting going on out there. Anything higher than a 5 or a 6, there's something major going on. And something like 16 means, all hell is breaking loose. Go to your bunker and hunker up. So this is a per hour graph of the number of sensors seeing port 1433 activity. As we can see, this fairly substantial rise in that activity in a short amount of time. That's usually a pretty good indication of either substantial scanning across the whole internet. And again, that might be the result of either a worm or a broad attack. We don't know that yet. But it's something that it's fairly obvious to notice when it's in this compressed amount of time. For comparison purposes, we'll show what it looks like on a per-day basis. When you go to the next slide. And there, looking at it on a day-to-day basis, you can definitely tell that it's under substantial going on. Obviously, you want to analyze this data on an hour-per-hour basis or even on a minute-per-minute basis, because you want to give as early an alert as possible to your constituency. So, obviously, for something like this, where the event really happens in a day, doing a day-to-day analysis is not all that useful. You want to get as real time as possible, as close as possible. Similarly, this is the volume of events per hour. You can see, again, that it's a substantial rise in the number, and that will show the per hour. And again, once again, it's pretty dramatic that indeed something is going on out there. Now we need to figure out exactly what it is. If we look at the number of sensors that are seeing this type of attack, which is a pretty generic signature, it matches on anything that uses the XP command shell extender procedure to execute, we notice that indeed it's also fairly well correlated. Although we're not seeing as many sensors detecting it, that is, it's because there are sensors that don't have that overlapping signature. Again, there are sensors that stop matching after they detect one particular type of signature. So you're not going to get, the same number of sensors seeing the same type of events. But the fact that they're correlate on time and on in shape very well is a pretty good indication that they are related. Okay, go for the next one. Now, if we start looking, trying to determine whether this is a broad attack, we have a single IP address scanning a large number of people, or we actually have a warm outbreak, and we run one of these reports, and we can tell that the number of source IP addresses launched in these attacks is increasingly actually fairly substantially. The line that just keeps going up there is the cumulative number of IP addresses that we have seen. So that basically counts the total number of IP addresses that we've seen launching this attack. As you can see, it's grown on a per hour basis in a very steep slope. That would be a very good indication that we've got some type of worm activity breaking out, and you probably want to alert on it. The lower line there that you can't see very well, that's the number of new IP addresses that are being infected. So in this graph you can't see it. The number is substantial, but not that major. So we're talking about a speed of worm. It had pretty good success, but it was no name that it was no code, right? If we look at the per hour, per day graph, you can see it a little bit better. And you can see that a substantial number of codes were being infected, but again, not a major number. You can definitely tell that, at some level, it reached somewhat of a saturation point where it stopped increasing, without really a high slope. And it was still infecting new hosts every day, but it wasn't infecting as many. Go to the next row. Somebody had a question? Here is the source. This would be the number of unique sources per hour. So not new or cumulative, just unique per hour. And we can see that the number, again, increases very substantially, but then it kind of stabilizes somewhat. You can see that better on the per day graph. And it's kind of interesting to compare the two of them, because this graph basically tells you that, you know, when we reach 2,000 hosts, the system is somewhat saturated in that we're only seeing about 2,000 unique hosts per hour in attacking new machines. You know, that would normally tell you that the system has been saturated, that the worm has found as many vulnerable machines as it's going to find. But if we go back to the per day number of infections, we saw that it was still infecting new hosts after a few days, just not as many. So, you know, from that you can gather that although it's infecting new hosts, the number of hosts that are being fixed is more or less at the same rate of new hosts being infected. That's why you see that balance going on there for those couple of days. So the next. And I think we are running out of time. I hope that with the talk you get a little bit of a taste of what the idea of an early warning system is. Maybe you share or thoughts that indeed is something that is required, and hopefully at least whet your appetite into doing a little more research on this particular area. If anybody has any questions, we'll be happy to take them. Although we are at 8:44, so you guys are on your break. Thank you.